What's up, college baseball fans? Welcome to another episode of the 11.7 podcast. Joined here with Dimitri, the Riz God, and Jack DeLongshaw, coming back from his Coastal Carolina weekend where he got to be on the broadcast. Really cool stuff. We're actually going to start the pod here in just a second, talking about your experience broadcasting from left field. Really cool. But listen, I mean, I know I say this every episode, but we have a ton to talk about. It's about to be May 1st here in a couple days. And even if your team is out of it, or if you think your team sucks, one good month of May can change your whole season. And we got a few teams that we're going to talk about how they can get back on track. Yes, that includes LSU. It includes TCU, a few other teams, Florida. But other than that, dude, mid-major baseball is thriving right now. And when we say mid-major, we mean non-Power 5. So everybody is going to get mad, but East Carolina fans in the American, dude, I think they're going to be a national seed. Same thing with like Troy, Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns. Like, everybody's playing good baseball right now. There's also a few other mid-major teams that I think have a legitimate chance to get to Omaha, because that's pretty much all I watched on streaming networks this weekend was just non-Power 5. Of course, before we get to all of that, we'll also do like weekend series recap, midweek preview, the usual for our Monday episode. But we do have to do our team of the week, homefieldapparel.com. Use our promo code CWS24. And let me go ahead and share my screen. So if you're on the YouTube, appreciate you watching on the YouTube. Everybody subscribe. We're around 700 and something now. But the even if you just listen to the podcast, every episode, we pick a team that stood out in the week. We show off the stuff that they have at Home Field Apparel. A lot of retro looks, a lot of, I don't know, like cool things. They have bomber jackets, jerseys, everything. So, or we can't say jerseys, but
pullovers.
And what do you guys want to do for the team of the week this week? There's a couple I have in mind, but I don't know if we've done them already.
Go with your gut.
You want to go Troy Trojans? Sweep over Coastal Carolina?
Go Oregon State.
Yeah.
Let's do Troy. I'm already pulled it up here. Homefieldapparel.com. And look at these retro looks. They used to be Troy State University. That's a cool shirt.
That's the helmet they put on when they hit homers.
What do you mean?
Did they used to be called Troy
State? Troy used to be called Troy State.
Oh, oops.
Look at this. I like this, the baseball script tee. Gray, white lettering. Really cool. So if you're a Troy fan, tune into the podcast. Check out Homefield Apparel. You get 15% off your first purchase using our promo code CWS24. And huge weekend.
Pull up Oregon State real quick. Go back.
Nope. I already canceled out of that. Sorry. Right, I'm running the show today.
You guys later. We're going dark. We are going dark this episode.
That's fair. Brother. Anyways, speaking of Troy. Huge series sweep. Puts them right back in the thick of things in the Sun Belt standings. Their RPI dropped like 30 points in a good way. They went from like the 70s to the 40s. And Jack, you got to broadcast this weekend. All three games, Coastal Carolina. And it was a tough week for the Chanticleers. They lose both midweeks to Creighton. They fly across the country to the middle of nowhere, Omaha, USA. They lose both games there. They get swept, an 0-5 week for Coastal. Did not see that coming. But just tell us about your experience there. I know you did a lot of content with the Troy Trojans, players, coaches, and everything. So I'm going to give you the floor here. Go ahead and tell everybody. What do you think about the Troy Trojans?
When you talk about mid-major baseball, it felt like the most pivotal matchup maybe in the country, just because when you look at the Sun Belt, right? They're fourth in the conference RPI right now. They were jockeying for second place in an attempt to try to catch up with the Raging Cajuns. Coastal coming off a weekend where they just beat the Raging Cajuns, feeling on top of the world. But this is the first 5-game losing streak for Coastal in 16 years since 2008. So I want to start with some good news for Coastal. If you're buying while the stock is low, this is the time to do it. Everyone's going to panic and freak out. And to me, I just saw it for what it was. Still a really talented ball club who played 5 games in 6 days, 2 of which halfway across the country. Oh, by the way, during finals week, there's a lot going on. And if you're a believer in the hot, cold, hot theory, Coastal had the longest win streak of their season, of their program's history, 17 games earlier this year. So they're going to be just fine. they played two teams this week that, in my opinion, are both tournament caliber teams in Troy and Creighton. And yes, I did a ton of content with Troy. It's because they won. I've got the self-awareness that if you do a pencil talk interview, guys that after a loss aren't really feeling it. But getting to talk with some of the boys with Derek Bender and Beach and like, Coastal's going to be fun. Now let's dive into the Trojans a little bit. Because, ladies and gentlemen, we've been riding the Troy train all season long. Skylar Mead, a friend of the pod, and his coaching staff, getting to meet a lot of those guys. Like, you want to talk about a group of dudes who got off of an 11-hour bus ride and arrived in Conway and looked like they were ready for the most exciting – like, it looked like they were going on vacation. They were going to go hang on the beach. Like, vibes were so loose that even on Friday, I go, man, this team, like, there is something special about this group. Like, I know we've been pumping their brakes all year, but – when then Friday, they're down all game. They don't flinch. And then Tremaine Cobbs hits this game-winning grand slam in the seventh inning. You go, man, between their starting pitching, whether it was Garrett Gaines or Luke Lyon or yesterday the Sun Belt preseason pitcher of the year, Grayson Stewart, I'm like, man, they got some dogs. And then Noah Manning, a midseason stopper of the year out of the pen. Like, pitching-wise, you're like, oh, dude, like, this looks like a Power 5 group. Like, Skylar Mead's broken the single-season strikeout record at every school he's gone to. Like, that checks out. But then offensively, boys, offensively, this was a juggernaut. Cole Myers, who at the top of that lineup is leading the country in WAR for center fielders, 15th overall nationally, leads the country in walks, hit his ninth homer yesterday. Like, what couldn't he do? But then the guy hitting right behind him hitting 378, and he's like second in OBP, Ethan Kavanaugh. And you haven't even mentioned the dude that's leading the country in RBIs, Brooks Bryant. A dude that started like 11 games last year, and in his sophomore year, like, must not have heard that you're supposed to go through a sophomore slump, has gone berserk. Pair that with the meat man, Will Butcher. 6-9 hit .410 for them this weekend. Like, dude, this was one of the – like most complete put together three phases of a ball like weekend I've ever seen, right? Like, they were just so deep, so loaded. And getting to talk with Skylar Mead, their coach, I know I dropped the pod last week and we juiced them up. I'm like, there's just something special going on in Troy, Alabama. And I know we showed the home field apparel. Their fans are crazy as hell. Coastal fans were pretty fed up with all the content I was pushing, but like, there was just so much to talk about. Like, a guy like Ben Arnett, who made his fifth start of the year, hit like .580 this weekend with two homers. Like, it was just that kind of weekend for the Trojans. And it was cool. It was a perfect weekend for us to do that boardwalk broadcast on Friday night where Sam Wiederhaft and I, the voice of the Myrtle Beach Cubs, a Cubs single A affiliate, we broadcast from left field in interviews a Sunday night MLB as possible. It was just like it was the coolest, like, way for us to, like, I think, touch the fabric and culture of college baseball. Like, went and hung out in the tailgates, broadcasted out there for a little bit. And it was just – it was sick. And I want to give a huge shout-out to Coastal Carolina's director, Alex Souza. The entire broadcast is run with students, 18 to 21-year-olds, running cameras, directing the show. Like, they're like – he's directing and leading this group of college kids where, like, I'd be in the stands drinking beer. These kids are working and learning how to, like, do this at such an elite level that it was really cool to be a part of.
Can we talk about – let's rewind back to Troy. We talked about this before the show. They're doing this without the Sun Belt Player of the Year. Talk about a – I don't want to get, like, personal because, you know, his career, whatever. But he fell off a cliff. He fell off the face of the earth. And it's like, wow, like, how did this happen? And how would Troy, like, hey, next man up?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about Shane Lewis, who, like, obviously had an unbelievable year last year, 25 homers, switch hitting outfielder coming from junior college. And I mean, last year, his numbers were crazy. This year, he struggled quite a bit. And it just shows that, like, I brought it up earlier this season, maybe in the preseason pod, but, like, you can't go off of, like, last year's statistics for everything. And because college baseball, you know, all three of us being former players, things change. Like, in the summertime when you're going playing summer ball, you get pressure put on you. Like, some players develop really well in the offseason, some don't. There might be some injury. I don't know. There's just a lot of different factors where, like, you see guys come out of nowhere and have unbelievable seasons, or you see guys who maybe had an awesome freshman year, sophomore year, whatever, and they dip down. But baseball is all about adjustments. Like, I'm not worried about Shane Lewis. Like, he's a freak athlete. He's proven it already. And it's not like he's some, like, high school superstar.
What do you mean you're not worried about him? The season's almost over. He never figured it out.
Well, it's not – yeah, but he bounced back. Like, he's got another season. Like, I think the cool part is like, you've watched him, like, go from being this All-American dude to, like, hey, man, like, I'm going to be the All-American teammate now. Like, he's taking a different role. So, there's another season. Oh, like, this is in his year. Like, he could easily jump back and do it again next year, or he might get a run in the tournament. But, like – But on the same note, like Will Butcher, who the meat man, every time he hits a home run, he takes a bite of a chicken nugget. Earlier in the season, he was playing with a literal chicken nugget in his back pocket during baseball games. He transferred from UNC Charlotte. Like, he finds a new home, and then all of a sudden, Troy tinkers with a little bit. The kid works his tail off, and like now he's having like a borderline first team year. Like, there's just so many like interesting storylines. How like there's so much bad about the portal, yes, but like for a kid like AJ Dill or Cleet Herzog. Cleet Herzog was on that Florida national runner-up team a year ago and now like got seven innings. He finds a new home, and all of a sudden you like all of a sudden tinker with mechanics a little bit. And now he's like a budding superstar for a team that really uses him.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not talking about like careers and life in general. I'm talking about this year only. Like, he is irrelevant to Troy team. Now behind the scenes on the bench in the dugout, locker room, I'm sure he's making a great impact. But
Well, I mean, look, there's plenty of guys. Like, another name that comes to mind, like Mike Sirota from Northeastern. Like, he was preseason player of the year, unbelievable in the Cape Cod, projected first round draft pick this year. He struggled quite a bit this year. And like, there comes a point where like some players, like, they have all the scouting reports. Like, teams know how to beat them after their unbelievable year from the year before. And it's like up to them now to make adjustments. So like, for Shane Lewis, he's got another year. Like, if he might end up getting drafted still just based off of last year. But as Jack said, like, it's all about being a good team guy now. And like, if he does get another opportunity, like, he's going to be ready for it. So the pressure's off of him. But you're right. Like, going back to the whole conversation, like how this got started, Troy's doing this now without the Sun Belt Player of the Year, without the guy that was going to get drafted in the first round, without the 25 homers from last year. So it just shows of like what kind of program they're running over there at Troy. And one more thing I want to add to that. I've talked about this several different times on the pod, but for those non-Power 5 teams or sleeper teams that end up making it to Omaha, you can think about like the Michigan team in 2019, Coastal Carolina in 2016, Fresno State 2008. Like, there's a bunch of examples of teams that get hot in the postseason, and everybody's like, well, where'd they come from? All of those teams were like preseason rated really high. Most of them were ranked preseason. Like, I know that Michigan team was. I know that Coastal Carolina team was. Fresno State in 2008. There's a lot of examples of teams that were preseason ranked. Like, everybody believed in what they had going. And then they start the year just like not playing good baseball. This Troy team fits the mold perfectly. They went from being like everybody's favorite to win the Sun Belt to irrelevant during the month of March. And now they're heated back up. Everybody thought that their RPI would never get down to an at-large bid. They never thought that they would be at the top of the Sun Belt, like top two or three spots in the Sun Belt. But here they are. So, like, I could see the way that they played this weekend, a deep run in June. Like, they have the pieces. So
I'll tell you this. There's a moment on Friday night, and then we'll move off of it. But there's always a moment in a season where you look back and go, that was it. Right? Like, LSU had it last year when, like, all of a sudden you had Riley Green, like, all these guys, like, grow up, and there's this moment. On Friday night, they hit the go-ahead grand slam, and then Coastal scratches back, and they make it a game. They're down two in the eighth. Logan Ross, a lefty on the mound, single Sebastian Alexander for Coastal Carolina. He steals second. He steals third. There's nobody else in the bottom of the eighth with a runner on third base, and Logan Ross punches three dudes in a row. Punches them out, three dudes in a row, and the place goes, like, dead silent. He goes bonkers, and, like, that was the moment where, it, like, you can almost feel, like, all the energy – and Coastal disappear, and then Troy just never looked back the rest of the weekend. Like, they go on a run, like, that was the moment for them.
100%. So while we're on the non-Power 5 talk, I promised everybody a couple teams that I think fit the hot, cold, hot theory. They fit the, like, they have the offense to make a deep postseason run. The first team that jumps off the page to me, the San Diego Toreros. I watched all three games this weekend against Gonzaga. Who Gonzaga was tied with them, I believe, going into the weekend in the WCC standings. And this San Diego team is freaking legit. I know they struggled early in the year because they played, think they ended up playing like TCU, Texas, both of them in a three-game series. They also had another like road series.
At Texas, where'd you see Irvine? Where'd you see San Diego? Where's Arizona? Where's Northridge? At Irvine, at UCLA, at Michigan, or in the Dodger Classic, Michigan, at Dallas Baptist, at Michigan.
Yeah, like that is a tough, tough non-conference schedule. And hey, I kind of wrote him off. And Dimitri was on him since day one. He was like, hey, listen, this team is really good. I like told Dimitri one time, like, we're not putting him in the mid-major top 25. We're not doing it. And I've come full circle. This is probably, other than, like, I would actually put them in the same conversation as UC Irvine and Santa Barbara for West Coast mid-major teams. Like, they are very offensive. They have starters on the mound that just pump, like, low to mid-90s. And I just think that there's some magic behind this Toreros team. So if you're a college baseball investor, gambler, whatever you want to call it, you can get some pretty juicy odds on them to just make it to Omaha. Like, they don't have to win the whole thing, but win five games in June, three in a regional, two in a super, it's doable. And then to piggyback off of that, Dallas Baptist, Coastal Carolina, Southern Miss, like they all fit this like hot, cold, hot theory that we always talk about, where come out the season, like you're winning the weekend series, you're playing good baseball, you go through a lull in April, and like Dallas Baptist picked it back up this weekend, really good weekend series against Florida International on the road. They sweep that. I know Southern Miss lost two out of three against Louisiana, but that was an awesome series to watch. That was a Kyle DeBarge series. He had, I think, every single RBI up until like the seventh inning of game three. And then who was the other team I mentioned? Southern Miss, Dallas Baptist, and I don't remember. There was another team. But anyways, I think this year we're going to see, just because of all the parity in college baseball this year, and there's not, like, other than Texas A&M, Arkansas, Tennessee, Oregon State to a degree, like, there hasn't been, like, this Tennessee of 2022 or Arkansas of 2021, LSU, Wake Forest of 2023. Like, there hasn't really been, like, a team that's, I think, clear-cut better than everybody else. A&M. Even, like, Texas A&M this week. Dude, I know, like, Texas A&M, probably the best team, should be the favorites to win it all. But, like, even them, they dropped game three against Georgia after, and then Georgia, we'll get into that series here in a second. But, like, Georgia played them really, really well and ended up salvaging game three. But, like, I just think, like, this, I don't know. Like, Texas A&M, like, they have their holes with the bullpen. Well, other than Ackermans or whatever.
They're not as dominant as the LSUs and the Arkansas right. and the Tennessee. They're not as dominant.
They play good at baseball, but like the problem they're gonna run into is like that 17 run first inning where like they gave up a 9 spot in the first inning. Like that's not gonna fly like in Omaha. Like that's just like right. you can't, it's gonna be insurmountable.
But anyway, so what I'm saying is like I think this year there's gonna be multiple non-power five teams in Omaha. Like I just think that teams aren't as deep as what we've used to been seeing.
What if we just say there's more than two? Let's just say there's in super I think in super regional there's gonna be more than one 3 seed or 4 seed.
Yeah. No, then I think there usually is. Like there's usually one or two 3 seeds.
I'm talking like 3 or 4.
I always have the theory, and a lot of people might disagree with this, but I think it's easier to win a regional as a 3 seed than a 2 seed. Because usually 2 seeds are the 1 seeds that cooled off towards the end of the year. And the 3 seeds are the ones that are like battling just to get into the tournament. And they go on a deep run in the conference tournament or whatever. I think 3 seeds are way more dangerous. Just because those 2 seeds are usually the 1 seeds that tail off towards the end, not playing good baseball. But that's a different
story. But you got to make sure you say 3 seed power five team are more dangerous, because a 3 seed mid-major team is usually a team that wasn't good enough to be a 2 seed or cooled off at the end and kind of got stuck as a 3 seed. So a 3 seed mid-major for me is not that dangerous. A 3 seed power five is fucking dangerous.
Yes, I do agree with that. I also have a theory that people might make fun of me for, but if I'm a mid-major team, I would rather be a 4 seed than a 3 seed. Yeah. Because that's your best chance of winning a regional, right? Like you have your ace going up against their ace, like the 1 seed, right? The clear cut favorite. So if you're 4 seed and you win game one with your ace, like you just have to kind of piece it together the rest of the way. But I think it's easier to win a regional as a 4 seed than it like a mid-major four seed where you have one stud that's going to go out and throw 7-8 innings on Friday.
Like Ryan, like imagine for example, Dallas Baptist with a four seed. Ryan Johnson just carved up. He had the game of his life. He takes down number one. All right. Then your two or three, if you go to your two guy, Dallas Baptist out hits him and wins it. It's kind of like what they did last year. It was kind of like what Oral Roberts did. They just slugged their way through the rest of it. They got through in game one, and then they just out hit everybody the rest of the way. And a team like Dallas Baptist, I mean, they're obviously not going to be a four seed, but you just need to offense out hit them, get your ace to beat the one seed, and then slug your way through.
100%. Anyways, we kind of got off track there. There's let's do the Southern Miss Louisiana game just because we're already kind of in the Sun Belt. But look, I think both of those teams deserve like I know the RPI is not 100% there right now. I think at the end of the year they both will be. But those are both tournament teams. Like, come on, like they played a hard fought series in Lafayette, Louisiana, at the Teague, great environment. And like it was just back and forth. Late game heroics. Kyle DeBarge stepped up and becomes that like team leader that we all knew he was. And we talked about it on the pod. We kind of predicted it. We said he's a big time player in big time moments, and like he's going to do his thing. On the flip side, like Southern Miss, like you did all you could. Like you were three outs away or six outs away from winning that series. So I don't know. I hope the Sun Belt ends up getting about four or five teams. I know they probably won't, but. Good. Like there's just such good baseball down there, and like I'm still hoping for a regional at the Teague, like that is always just prime time college baseball watching, when Louisiana hosts a regional. But what do you guys think about that series? Anything that stands out, jumps to you?
I just think it was the writing was on the wall. You saw Louisiana roll into Conway against Coastal, lost a hard fought series, but battled punch for punch all weekend against Coastal Carolina, and then you're like. All right, these guys have the mojo. They're a little hungry. They're a little pissed off, snake bitten by that Coastal series. They get to go back home. Another big time series. Not like a letdown weekend. It's like, oh, we got to get right back up. This is the Southern Miss. We hate them. They don't like us. And I think it was the perfect situation for them to get a series win. And I think it doesn't really say much about Southern Miss. It just shows that Louisiana is legit. They can bounce back.
Not on Fraud Watch.
Not confirmed.
No Fraud Watch. Kentucky's on Fraud Watch.
No, I think Dalton McIntyre and DeBarge, like the stars were stars last weekend. Like I think that's what's so much fun about those series is like you can feel like how important it is to both of those fan bases. And then your dudes show up. Luke Juhas of the Cajuns as well, like nice backside homer. Like they're both of their offenses are so deep that like I just watched these Sun Belt series and I'm like, dude, it must be so – like, you must just lose a ton of sleep if you're opposing pitching coaches. Like, how do you pitch these guys, especially in those environments? So, man, it's just a lot of fun to watch.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. Dude,
if Troy – I know they were playing – they weren't playing great, but they just don't lose that series to South Alabama. They would be in a gross spot right now.
I'm just telling you. They've got Alabama. So, they got Alabama State this week at Tuesday. And then they've got the Cajuns come to Devil's Alley at Troy this weekend. And then they've got Alabama next Tuesday. They continue to go on a big run this, like, next 10 days. You're going to see that RPI, like, close to 20. Oh. We're going to have a conversation of – I know that some people on this pod don't think that some
else – They'll be 30 to 35 range.
Yeah. But you were like, they continue to go on a crazy run. Like, I still think the winner of the Sun Belt host this year, whoever it is.
It needs to happen, dude. There's so many flaws in this college baseball. Like, I know the RPI gets shit on all the time, and like, we still kind of have to abide by the rules of like what the committee's going to look at, right? But the winner of the Sun Belt, what?
I just don't like when people shit on the RPI. I think it's the perfect thing to use because West Coast team, East Coast team in the middle of bumfuck nowhere, Idaho or South Dakota or whatever, it's the best way to rank teams. Unbiasedly.
No, I agree. I mean, listen, we haven't had anything better yet. So we got to abide by the rules that the committee is going to go with, whatever. But I'm just saying, like, I'm with Jack on this. The winner of the Sun Belt, like a deep conference with a lot of talent, like they deserve to host a regional. Like they deserve to have people come to them. They all have awesome ballparks. Like it's not like they're crappy little ballparks that nobody wants to go to. Like a regional at Troy would be sick. A regional at the Teague would be sick. Same thing with like with Coastal Carolina, Southern Miss. Like they've done it in the past and they've been awesome regionals. Georgia Southern's regional was one of my favorites I've ever been to. So like I don't know if they're I predicted it before the season. I said on the pod, like the Sun Belt's going to eat itself alive and nobody's going to host. But I do think now we can see a picture where if a team like Troy or Louisiana, Coastal Carolina, Southern Miss, if one goes and wins 12 straight games, like their RPI will be there in that hosting picture. So it'll figure itself out.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a great league of beating itself up, but they don't have that. They're not in that upper stratosphere where a team like fucking Auburn, 3-18 in the SEC and one game under 500 and they're 43 RPI just because they're in the SEC.
Yeah. Well, like, that's the problem we get to.
That's the only thing that bugs me, but their RPI is there for a reason because they are playing and getting some wins against the best team. So,
yeah. I want to say one more thing before we transition off to like the Big 12, ACC, SEC, all those fun conferences. Dude, the Horizon League does not deserve an automatic bid. I'm over the Horizon League. Every week I check the standings and I know Oral Roberts made it to the tournament last year, went on a run, went to Omaha. Like, I get it, guys. Dude, this year the Horizon League is, what is it, six teams, and they're all trash, and their best team is not even postseason eligible, I found out.
Is that the like, Summit? The Summit? Or
Oh, so not what did what? I say, the Horizon? I'm so sorry. Rewind everything. I'm so sorry to Horizon fans. The Summit League.
Yeah, Summit.
I have the Horizon League pulled up right now on Warren Nolan. And
right.
I'm sorry. I meant the Summit League. The Summit League, Summit League, Summit League. The Summit League is six teams. The best team is not even postseason eligible. So that means either Omaha, North Dakota State, South Dakota State, Northern Colorado, or last place Oral Roberts is going to make it to the tournament. So they only have five teams that are postseason eligible. And like combined, they're 0-22 against quad one teams.
28.
Dude, it's so bad. Oh, yeah. 0-28 against quad one teams. And like St. Thomas is a pretty good team. They're still below 500, but they're not postseason eligible. They're 11-6 in the conference.
They're not just don't even sugarcoat it. They're not a good team.
No, they're not a good team. But what I'm saying is we get an automatic qualifier out of the Summit League, and there's only five postseason eligible teams. That needs to change. They need to join conferences with somebody else.
I mean, if we're gonna do that, you better clown the SWAC. You better clown the freaking some of these other
leagues. At least the SWAC has 12 teams.
I mean, the Northeast has 12 too, but like the top.
That's what I'm saying. The Summit League needs to join forces with somebody else.
It will.
The Mountain West, like the Mountain West and the Summit can join. The Mountain West only has seven teams. So you boom. Will.
College baseball is always 4 or 5 years behind the rest of the sports. So like right now with college sports in general, like evolving every day, like football is right now in this weird transition period of like the Big South and the OVC combining for football purposes because there'd be like four teams left, the SoCon and the CA. Like college baseball, unfortunately, will be the afterthought, right? Because revenue generation, all that bullshit. It'll take time for it to all mend into something that makes sense.
I think I'm going to say it right now. I told Ben this 100 times, but I don't think we've ever said it live on air. Give me the top 100 or 150 college baseball teams. The rest can kick rocks, and we have a Super League.
Yeah, I don't know.
Are you saying like an FCS, FBS kind of thing?
Basically, like, yeah. Well,
you know it's coming to that soon, right?
Yeah. And it's coming to that. And I can't wait because this isn't me not enjoying the joys of your Cinderella four seeds and your small, small school. But
sure,
if you want college baseball to continue to grow, you can't have people following 300 teams or even attempting to. It's not possible. But if you have 100 teams, at least now you can narrow down spotlight. They know players by name more. They know by heart or right off the top of their head, this team, bad team, good. This, you know, that kind of thing. If you have 100 teams, it's much more easier to cover and much more but much more focused and just better. Like MLB, when you watch MLB highlights, you can like talk about almost every team every night because there's only 30 of them. Only 15 teams win a night. I think I think it's better for the 100-150 team to get rid of the one other 150. Send them.
Yeah. So what the talk is right now, and I don't even know if like a lot of this is like public or anything, but the talk right now is it's going to be scholarship based. Like the college baseball eventually, maybe it might be 10 years from now. It might be 5 years from now. I don't know. But they're going to have to increase the scholarships eventually. Like, and that goes for all Title IX sports. And there's going to be a division where, and this is the way I've interpreted it, where like teams are going to be able to give 25 scholarships. If you can't commit to that, you're going to play in the FCS level where there is no like maximum scholarship limit. Like you'll probably stick at the 11.7. They probably won't give out the full 11.7, but that'll separate the teams like from the ACC, SEC, Big 12, Sun Belt. I even think schools like in the SoCon and like the Mountain West, like I think there's going to be a lot of teams that will increase the scholarship limit and play in that upper tier, but then you'll separate the schools. There's probably about 100 schools that just don't take baseball seriously, and like they'll play in their own division. So that's what I think it's going to come to eventually, like 5 years from now, 10 years, I don't know. But yeah, I think it'll be better for the sport, but I still do have like a soft spot for some of those teams. You know, even in the Summit League, I still do.
We got a Summit League team in Omaha last year.
All I know. That's what's crazy about my statements. Burns, I know.
States, mid-major baseball.
But Oral Roberts also ran that conference for 15 years.
Yeah.
It was automatic. They were going to make it to the tournament.
But it's such a soft subject for me because I love those small schools like the Oral Roberts and even the Fresno was a tiny school when they went to Omaha and all that stuff. But it's like, you got to move along with time. You got to move along with time. I want to see the best players. I want to see the best team night in and night out. So,
yeah.
It is what it is. Not. Either get on board, invest in the program, or get left behind. That's just that simple. And I don't want to watch a team that's not investing in their program. So,
yeah, that's true. Anyways, boys, we have a big dilemma right now in not only the Golden Spikes watch list, but the SEC Player of the Year spotlight, I guess we can call it. I cannot decide right now. I'm 50-50 on Charlie Condon, Jack Caglione, and I need your help because what both of them are doing are historic to college baseball. And sure, there's some other guys you can throw in there. You know, the Braden Montgomerys, Travis Bazanas, Hagan Smiths, Jace LaViolette. Like there's other guys, Christian Moore is another guy, but when it comes down to it, like the voters of the Golden Spikes are going to have to make a grown man decision or grown woman decision and pick between Charlie Condon and his 29 homers through 49 games or whatever it is, 53 games, Jack Caglione mashing homers. I think he's at 26 now ish, 25, 26, but he's also 6-0 on the mound. And Florida's 6-1 in SEC games when he pitches and 3-11 when he doesn't. So I don't know. I need help, boys. Like right now, who are you thinking?
I think, I mean, 26 home run, 29 home run, one guy pitches, one guy doesn't. Like you have to respect Charlie Condon. Probably one of the best offensive years we've had in the BB Corps era. No doubt about it. But the other guy is right there, right next to him. Already hit 33 a year ago. He's not showing any signs of slumping this year. And he pitched, and he's electric on the mound, and he wins the team ballgame as a difference maker. You have to give it to that guy.
Jack, what do you think?
Man, it's tough. Like I know that the Golden Spikes, by definition, is the most impressive amateur college baseball player. It's not most valuable. And I think this is one of those rare years like where if it were most valuable, right? Like who is most valuable to their team? You could make, like, is Georgia where they are without Charlie Condon? Hell no. But Florida refuses to win a game that's not named Sunday, and that's when Cags pitches. So it's like, I don't know, the 22-21, and every time he touches the rubber, it's a guaranteed bona fide dub. So I say flip a coin. Honestly, God, I would love to see the committee do is allow those two behemoth of men to stand up in front of thousands of people and let them play rock, paper, scissors for the award. That's what I think.
Or something that we joked about. We joked about it over our group message. At the end of the year, you have the Caglione party and you have the Condon party, similar to like Democrats, Republicans, and you get both people or both groups to speak on, like, speak on a stage and lay out points why you think you should win it. And it could be like a little debate. So the whole college baseball world gets to listen to the Condon versus Caglione debate, and we get to vote from there. That's simple, right?
Yeah. Do we want to pretend right now? I'll be the moderator.
You guys want to do like a 1 minute skit of this or something?
Well, okay, you can be the moderator, Jack. Dimitri, who do you want?
Give me the Cags party of two.
All right, I'll be Condon. I'll be Charlie Condon. Party of Condon. Let me think real fast. What are my key hitting points?
I'll be the independent party too, coming out of left field. I've got a fun nominee that I'd like to one up both of you SEC losers with.
Independents never win. Right. Yeah. I mean, like, look. All right, so I'll start. I guess you have to ask the question. Is that how we're doing this, moderator?
Speaker of the House, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you voting on our Congressional College Baseball Committee. House Party Condon, House Party Caglione, or Caglione, as some might call him. We're going to open the floor. You get a minute per a question. Mr. Condon, why do you believe that you are the greatest college baseball potential triple crown that maybe we've seen in the last decade?
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for having me, Mr. DeLongshaw. What I'm doing right now is not only crazy in college baseball terms, but it's also crazy in just baseball terms in general. You can take any 12-year-old in the nation and let them play 53 games, and they're not at 29 homers. I'll tell you why. Because teams start pitching around you. 12-year-old with 29 homers, he's not seeing strikes. I'm not seeing strikes, and I'm still putting up record numbers. I am 7 home runs over pace of what my counterpart, Jack Caglione, had at this point last year. Sure, my team isn't great. We have some flaws in the bullpen. But look, I'm there at all times to step up in big moments. And not only am I going to break this record of 33 homers in the BB Corps era, I'm looking towards the 40 homer mark, which we haven't seen since the juiced bats. So, sure, I'm hitting in the two hole, and nobody wants to pitch to me, and they don't. I'm top 5 in the country in walks. 10 seconds. But listen, what I'm doing right now is something we'll never see again. So, yes, I'm the most outstanding player. Plus, I did it last year, too. People forget. 25 homers as a freshman.
Mr. Condon, your time is up. Thank you for your answer. Hoo to Dog Nation. Now, Mr. Caglione, a lot of people are saying the Florida Gators have been wildly underwhelming this year, yet your ability on both sides of the plate has continued to allow them to be relevant. What would your stake be as Golden Spikes Player of the Year?
Well. What my teammates do has nothing to do with me. I am my own player. What the Friday night starter, what the Saturday night starter does, I don't give a shit what they do. It's what Jack Caglione does. Mr. Sleepy Condon over there doesn't pitch. He just hits and he plays the position. That's it. I do both. I hit and I pitch. I have 3 homers left in him, but he has to remember I have to pitch. I'm tired sometimes. But if I didn't pitch, I'd have like 60 home runs by now. We are going to make Golden Spikes were great again. The true winner is here. I don't need 1 minute. I just need 38 seconds. Jack Caglione for Golden Spikes winner. That's it.
I just want to add, I'm a real salt of the earth kind of guy. I walk on to an SEC program, get redshirted my first year. And this guy over here was like one of the top prospects out of high school ever. Like, he's been gifted everything since day one. I had to earn everything. I'm right here.
Sounds like Mr. Shohei. Mr. Shohei Paisani sounds like someone we all know. It sounds like he got a slight $1 million loan from his father, and that's how he was able to build this fortune. Thoughts?
I had a broken arm. I had a whole ligament missing, gone, broken, just didn't exist anymore.
Voters, I've never had a broken arm.
Never.
And I put so much I'm indestructible. Hard work of the
You're gonna vote for a guy that doesn't have an arm?
Excuse me. I had a broken arm, broken leg, thanks to all the great training staff and great doctors and great physical therapists in Gainesville and the great city of Gainesville.
Right, Mr. Cags, we do have one final question for you. How good could you possibly be if one of the greatest college baseball podcasts of all time, one of their co-hosts, doesn't even know how to say your name correctly? Is that something that might hurt your voter camp?
Caglione, Caglione, doesn't matter. Golden Spikes winner. Thank you very much.
Well, I just want to say, if you couldn't win this award last year, why do you deserve it this year?
Oh.
Because, you know, the great people in the state, in the great state of Louisiana, just had to have the Golden Spike winner or they get their feelings hurt.
Remind me again, how did game three of the College World Series go last year? Didn't you start on that game? You pitched?
I did. I was very tired from hitting all week.
It also took you 70 games to get to 33 homers to break the BB Corps record.
I was extremely tired from pitching because I had to do two things because my team is shit. They can't do it themselves. So I had to do both.
Not a good decision maker. You should have went to a different school, it sounds like.
Well, I was loyal to the great city of Gainesville, Florida. They've done great things for me. And I can't wait to be back there again in the future. But for now, Golden Spikes, Jack Caglione. That's it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Condon, one final question. There's been a lot of conversation and obviously the Gainesville dugout, that size 17 shoe, it's back in some pretty serious heat below the belt. I think voters across the country would love to know what it is that you're hanging down below. Maybe it's just an attitude.
Sleepy Condon. That's not a true shoe size. Can we please get a measuring stick here so we can measure Mr. Condon's foot? It is not true.
He was talking about your foot.
He
was talking about your size 17 shoe.
Not true.
No surprise out of that came spreading misinformation, even though it was a compliment to Dorian.
I am here to clean the swamp called the Golden Spike voting system. I am here to clean it up. It is atrocious. It is disgusting. It is not who we are. And we are here to take it back. Make Golden Spikes Award great again. Thank you very much.
We might get sued by Jack Caglione for you doing a Trump impersonation.
That was so crazy.
The goodness is, it was a brutal Trump. So, like, I don't even know if you're going to be able to tell until the last 10 seconds.
Wasn't even close. Anyway, yeah,
that was
come
cool.
on, guys.
What's your third party independent? I'm interested to hear your thoughts here, Jack. Who
independent is party? Just because the Riz guy hates him, I don't. Mid-major nation, stand up. What Lyle Miller Green and Gov Nation is doing right now is insane. Just broke the single season record for home runs for obviously Austin Peay. That was in the windshield. We're not worried about that anymore. But number one in the country in homers is a team. What Kyle Miller Green is doing right now. And yeah, I said Kyle. I played with the kid. Is this a little bit of a biased take? Sure, but that's what the voter election process looks like. I got to know the guy. I got to feel the guy. I know his story. He's bounced around, started his career at George Mason, ended up at Chipola College, absolute powerhouse in the state of Florida. He transfers to Oklahoma State. He gets stuck behind Griffin Dorshing, a quite literal horse playing first base. And Lyle, with Roland Fanning, rolls in to Austin Peay, and what he's doing right now on both sides of the plate, just like Mr. Caglione that we mentioned, on both sides, got a win on the mound against Mississippi State, who we've already said is really good. But what he's doing offensively, 6-for-6 in a game, he's hitting well over 380 now, the 25-plus homers, the RBIs is stupid. You're talking about most impressive amateur? Nobody saw this coming, except for the 11.7 podcast. And everyone I've ever seen Gov Nation. But what he's doing, I think, on both sides of the plate at the mid-major level with kind of all the pressure in the world of your shoulders, like knowing like, hey, we're kind of going to go where you go. That's my guy. Give it to him. Let's be weird. If here's the deal too. If the Golden Spikes camp is going to split so many votes between Condon and Cags, let's let LMG just keep sliding through. Let's reward the old guy, baby.
I will say this.
You didn't realize you played with him at George Mason.
Yeah, you didn't understand the bias from day one.
Makes sense now. Is his real name Kyle?
A buddy of ours was Lyle Miller Green showed up on campus at George Mason his freshman year at 18 years old, 6'4", 255 pounds, and was single leg squatting like 315. It was like the stupidest thing. He used to take a weighted penny bat. Like we're all using metal bats in BP. He used to take a weighted penny bat, and he would hit balls 430, 440 TrackMan. Up the hill and left center field at the half. Like, this dude is a freak of nature. If he doesn't win the Golden Spikes, fine. I'll be upset, but it's a little understandable.
He's the 11.7 mid-major player of the year, though.
I just hope it would be massive for the sport to get a mid-major guy back in New York. Just get Lyle Miller to New York is all I would ask for.
They don't do that anymore.
It's not
going to
happen, Braden. What?
I don't think they do that anymore. What? They haven't done it since COVID.
Yeah.
Done what?
Like the top three guys flying out to New York or L.A. I think it was L.A. actually. But
no, it's always been New York.
That's the Heisman.
No. I'm pretty sure when Kyle Lewis won it, I think it was in L.A. Golden he was the last mid-major guy to even make the finals, and he won it.
New York.
While you look that up, look, Jack, I love the case for Lyle Miller Green. He's putting up stupid numbers. He's had like multiple 450-foot homers this year. It's nuts.
491 on a quick pitch.
Yeah. Crazy. Was that against Auburn? I remember that now.
Crazy, man. It went viral because the guy goes off the mound really fast, and it looked kind of weird. And he just like doesn't – I mean, think about it. That's like barely lower half. Like he's just swinging upper body on that ball too. Yeah.
So they do go to L.A. now, but I think in the past it was New York.
Told you, dude. I was roommates with the guy that won.
No, I'm not messing with you. You're right.
I had Scott Moore's knocking on my apartment door.
I think it was New York before.
I think maybe, but I know it was L.A. when Kyle did it. But they don't do like the top three or four to get to make it and do the ceremony. They just announce it.
That's so stupid. Bring it back.
I also need to bring back, dude. They need to bring back the College Baseball Home Run Derby. Like, I don't know what we need, what kind of funds we need to fund it, but. It doesn't have to be at Omaha. I would love it to be at Omaha. But, like, give Condon, Cags, like, Montgomery, Bazana, give them that orange Easton stealth and let them just hit 550-foot moonshots.
100-team. Think about it. If we go to the 100-team in college baseball thing or whatever, 125, whatever it is, all-star game. East, west, north, south, whatever you want to do, home run derby, just one weekend off
a year. Numbers. I promise you. It would do numbers.
Metal bat, home run derby. Do your golden arm thing. Do a skills, kind of some sort of skills show. Make it sick. Like, I'm telling you.
Well, I tell you what they have done, which is cool. Like, with the MLB draft combine, like, popping up, what was that, 3 years ago? 3 years ago? 2019. Huh? But what's cool is when they push the draft back to July, now you've got, like, because it's so unrealistic to do it in the middle of the year. Like, I love the idea, but it just would never happen. But if you did it, like, the weekend after Omaha, or, like, even if, like, that day off in Omaha before the national championship, what if you got, like, the best college baseball players in the country, you did an all-star game in Omaha the day before the, like, national championship, and it gave, like, these Lyle Miller Greens, and it gave guys like Derek Bender these opportunities to play in front of the country when people are all over the college baseball like bandwagon a little bit. And it gave scouts the opportunity to go like, hey, just because like, you know, they're 23, 24, they're a little bit older. Like this guy's a freaking ballpark. Like these dudes could play AAA baseball tomorrow. Let's give them a shot instead of like going the projectable route. Like give ball players a shot for damn sake.
Celebrity softball game, all former Golden Spikes winners. With a few celebrities sprinkled in there. Like, if I'm telling you, do stuff like that. Do a celebrity softball game just like MLB, literally the same thing. And it would be great. I'm telling you, on ESPN 8, the Ocho.
I have all
of this.
That's a perfect transition. I don't know if you guys have anything else on that note. Speaking of celebrity softball game, if that's the case, can we have Livy Dunn pitch in it? Did you see Livy Dunn and Paul Skeen just casually taking a little Big East baseball band?
Yeah, a little Georgetown Creighton. That was big time. Big time for the sport.
I'm not going to sit here and fanboy and fangirl over 21-year-olds right now, 22-year-olds.
Oh, my
that's,
God.
That's what the whole podcast is, dude. Let me break it down to you. That's all we do.
I'm objectively speaking about baseball players. I'm not fanboying over some Livy Dunn who didn't even participate in her national championship.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, LSU fan.
They won it all. I thought LSU won the gymnastics thing.
They did, but apparently, like, I saw it on Twitter. Apparently, Livy Dunn was like the main picture or whatever, and everybody in the comments, like, she didn't do anything.
Your Trump impression's coming in strong. Misinformation. Did they win it? I saw a tweet. Yeah, you know, whatever. It was a tweet. That'd be real.
I'm just messing around right now. I don't really care about gymnastics. I could give two shit if Livy Dunn participated or not. Like, congrats to LSU gymnastics.
Yep. All right, boys, we have like at least three or four more conferences we need to talk about. I do want to start with, and listen, we're not going to comment on Maracna's possible. We're not going to comment on this whole Georgia reliever. Nobody, there's been a ton of people tagging us in this tweet. This is all we're going to say about it. For the players, by the players, there is nobody on a college baseball field that cares about using any kind of substance potentially or not. No players care about that stuff. In fact, if as a player, I want my pitchers using that, whatever it is, rosin and sunscreen, spider tech, whatever it is. Like, I want my player, I want my teammates to go out there and use the stuff. I don't care what the other team does as a hitter. So everybody that's tagged us in it, most of them never played the sport. It's not a big deal. So we're not going to comment on that. But what we are going to comment on is what's going on in South Carolina right now.
Wait, before we get there, sticky stuff. College pitchers try to throw so damn hard, throw as hard as they can, they have them don't know where it's going. I want them to put sticky stuff on as a hitter so they don't fucking plunk me in the head, in the side of the rib, in the back, whatever. Get sticky stuff. Give them command, please. That's all.
Here's the only thing I'll say about it. And A&M fans blowing us up like, oh, why aren't you guys talking about this? First off, we're the only pod in college baseball that predicted A&M to win the CC. Like, who had it? Ben, did you have him?
Yeah.
Yeah, so but we're all over the Aggies. Braden Montgomery, friend of the pod, big fan. I would bet my life savings that not one but multiple guys in that A&M pen are using sticky stuff too. That's all I have to say.
Everybody is. Everybody's using it.
Something.
They don't even check in college baseball. Like, the umpires might tap your hand, but like, nobody's checking. It's not a big deal. I think they should be able to use it in the big leagues too. Like, it's what it do. As long as you don't abuse it and the ball is like full of slime, it doesn't matter. Anyways, that's all we're gonna say on it. But hashtag thanks Kip. Jack, break down the story for us, because what's going on at South Carolina is hilarious.
All right, so we have to South Carolina. So a lot of conversation about the Gamecocks this year. And they've heard the noise, and they've been outwardly speaking out about, like, hey, we hear you, by the way. Like, we heard all the preseason talk. It's hilarious. Cole Messina, last night, after the Gamecocks get a huge win against Kentucky, boat race them yesterday against a top-five team in the country. Kip Bocknight, a former Golden Spikes winner for the South Carolina Gamecocks, is their go-to color analyst for all their broadcasts. He does unbelievable work. Sits alongside my guy, Dave Weinstein. He does all their games. But Kip Bocknight has been very outspoken about how he hasn't been in love with this Carolina offense. Basically went on and said, hey, here's the deal. This Carolina team, they're wild swingers. They don't walk nearly enough. They don't scare me at all, and frankly don't think they're very good. Message received, big guy. Last night, like 9 to 10 Carolina Gamecocks posted like pictures from their series win just saying, thanks, Kip. Like, the boys heard it, and they responded in a massive way. That shit fires me up. Like, I don't know about you guys, but, like, it fires me up. Kind of like what Jordan said.
Is Kip,
like, stuff? Yeah.
Is Kip involved in the program? Does he, like, show up at Founders Park at all? Like, is he
– He's their broadcaster.
He broadcasts every one of their home games, dude. Yeah, bro. It's a tough look. They broadcast all of their
– What is you doing?
Yeah, it's one thing for the Rizgun to talk his talk. He's running a pod to broadcast every one of their games. You're supposed to be like the biggest advocate. He won a Golden Spikes.
I will say, you can be an advocate and be critical. That's 100%. I respect that. But, buddy.
Well, his numbers are wrong. They're leading the nation in walks. Like, I don't know where he's getting these numbers.
Like, you can't just be shouting from the rooftops just because of, like, one game that he didn't like what he saw.
Yeah. Huge series win, though, for South Carolina at home against I think they're a really good Kentucky team. Dimitri thinks they're on fraud watch, but I want to add one more thing to this Kip Bocknight situation. I'm scared that the Gamecocks listened to my rant on them when they played at Ole Miss, because I kind of said the same things. Maybe Kip Bocknight heard what I was saying. And do they know about me? They probably have. Yeah. Look, I'm sorry.
Wait. Time out. They know what Ben said.
Yeah, they do. They know. You gotta understand, I interviewed some of the boys last year. I interviewed them 3 months ago. I told you I'm easily biased and persuaded. So after the Ole Miss weekend, they did hit me up like, hey, thanks for having the boys back. And I was like, what's up? And they were like, yeah, we listen to the pod. I was like, oh shit, really?
Yeah, that's not a good look. I declared them the second worst team in the SEC. I said that there was no fire under them. They looked like they didn't want to be there. And I'm dead wrong. Like, they're going to end up hosting a regional. So my apologies.
Well, and again, to protect you, like, in my opinion, like, as someone, you're the needle, Ben, you see it. For me, I think they're more so like concerned with like South Carolina fans as a whole. Like the issue with Gamecock baseball fans is you like they touched this dynasty, right? Like they were the dynasty in 10, 11, 12. And I think since then, all of a sudden, like every little thing, there's these knee-jerk reactions from this fan base. I'm not calling them like casuals, but like it is fair weather.
You're like Astro fan, just like me, the Hurricanes fan. You saw greatness, you saw so much success. Right. Now you lose your shit every time Jose Abreu, you can't feel the ground ball. Every time somebody strikes out.
So Ben, it wasn't as much to do with you. Like it was like you saw what you saw. Like you had like it was the react. But for me, like where my problem was with a lot of this fan base is that you just like you say what you see immediately, but don't take a look at the picture at times. And I'm not saying that about you because like you were watching that weekend. They are living the bigger picture, so have the wherewithal to look back. But for Kip to say what he said is like direct representation of what these players feel from the outside. Right. Yeah. This is what he said. I found the exact quote. If I'm facing South Carolina right now, frankly, I'm not concerned. They swing at way too many pitches, way too many big swings, and bad approaches with two strikes. Not concerned with the offense. Cole Messina tagged it and goes, I guess not too much this weekend. Thanks, Kip. So, right. So it's like he's just like kind of saying what the fan base feels, which I guess is a part of his job. But like, you're right, Ben. It was like it was wrong. Like they're drawing more walks. Just as much as anyone in the country, right? Now, Troy's one, South Carolina's two. So I don't know. It was a crazy take. It's crazy. Yeah.
I think you can't just sit here and flame Kip. Is it Buchknight or Buchknight?
Buchknight.
Buchknight. You can't flame him because he spoke out what he feels. I would rather people. I've always been this way. Say how you feel. Say what you want to say. Don't hold it back just because you don't want to get flamed. Like Ben put a hot take out there. I put out hot takes every week. We all put out hot takes. Guys tweeted us the LSU not picking them to win the SEC. It's a hot take. It's more fun. It's entertaining. That's what we're here for. Like I'm not here to judge and criticize everything someone said in February, March, April, May, June, July, whatever. Say how you feel. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, deal with the blowback and move along.
I completely agree. I just love the reaction. Like I love that bulletin board material shit. Like it's just fun. That's fun.
It's a storyline. It's more fun to follow. Now, if South Carolina goes on a run and goes to Omaha, make a freaking shirt. Thanks, Kip, wearing it in Omaha. Like, yeah. That kind of thing. Like have fun with it. I don't think Kip Buchknight is gonna go out there and say, "What the fuck, guys? You were supposed." I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have said. No, he said what he said. And move on.
That weekend series was fun to watch. Kentucky was up, what was it, 3 runs in the 9th inning. South Carolina hits 3 homers in the 9th, and they hit a walk-off homer in the 10th. And Kentucky, like, they're still getting a lot of hate for being on Fraud Watch. I still think they're a good team, and it's tough to win in Columbia. Like, it is. South Carolina is really, really good at home. And, like, I just think that was a really good second tier of the SEC matchup.
Yeah.
I don't want to say Kentucky's not good, but we've seen them. Last year, they were first in the SEC 5-6 weeks in, whatever it was. And then they started playing the real get in their shit part of their schedule. Yeah. And it didn't work out so great for them. This year, we're going off of what we saw last year. It's very similar. 14-1 in the SEC through 5 weeks of play. Biggest part of their schedule still ahead of them. You're like, okay, either we can go one of two ways here. Either they're going to do the same thing they did last year, or they're going to prove us wrong and be like, no, they're actually really damn good. They're a good SEC team. But series at home against Tennessee, you got to win that one. Lost it. Series at South Carolina on the road, not a top three SEC team. You got to find a way to win that one on the road. You lose it. And now it's like.
Yeah, but they're not getting swept. Like they find a way, then they do. There was multiple. There was a game against Tennessee that I think they should have won. Well, maybe not actually. I mean, they played Tennessee really well, and they played South Carolina well. Like they were 3 outs away from winning that series.
You don't get a trophy for playing well.
Yeah, but
I'm just saying, I wouldn't call them a fraud watch when they're like 16-4 or 16-5 in SEC play.
I'll tell you why I'm rooting for him, man. And I know I went off on the tangent last week, and I'll keep this short and simple. Like, dude, the small ball stuff, that play, the first and third play is my candidate for play. Dude, I don't know why teams don't do it more. The lefty on the mound, the guy takes off, falls in between the base path, and the guy just
easily slides into home. Like, could have been a stand-up steal, stolen home.
Yeah.
Like, that was an electric play that you used to run, like, in 10U baseball.
Yeah.
Like, a new USSSA tournament. Like, play of the year candidate. Like, I'm rooting for him because I want to bring back some of that small ball energy. That was sick.
By the way, I like Kentucky. I think they're good, but I just don't think they're a top two, top three SEC team. We were looking at them at 14-1, like, oh my God, this might be the best team in the SEC. No, no, they're not. They're a good team, but they're not a top three team in the country, I don't think.
Still a potential Omaha team. I mean, like, you still got to like your chances if you're a Kentucky fan. Last year they ran into LSU in the Supers. Who knows? If they would have played somebody else in a Super, they probably would have advanced to Omaha, which is big
for them. I said that. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. The other SEC news that we have, obviously, there was a ton of good baseball played across the SEC land, but Mississippi State going on the road to Vanderbilt and winning that series kind of solidified them to me as potential regional host. And hand up, I said Ole Miss was going to be better than Mississippi State this year. Rizgod Dimitri said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Nope, Mississippi State's going to be way better than Ole Miss, and he was right. So that was a huge series win. Vanderbilt, very confusing team for me. Sometimes they look great. Sometimes they look terrible. And, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all I have to say on that. Like, huge series win in Nashville. Like, go defend your home turf, win this weekend, and finish the SEC strong, and you might host a regional, which is great for the sport. I love a Duty Noble regional host.
So good.
I agree.
Rizgod, you need to hop off here pretty soon, right?
Yeah, I got to go in about 2 minutes.
All right. Well, this time, don't end the stream like you did last time.
I'm not going to. Don't worry.
Yeah. We got cut out of about 15 minutes, but it's okay. Maybe
I just didn't want you guys talking shit about me after I got off. Maybe it was just like a play. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I ended it. Oops.
Yeah. No, we weren't going to talk shit. We were going to praise you. Arkansas was a fun weekend to watch. High electric crowd. Hagan Smith is the real freaking deal. Nobody's going to beat him this year. We got to see Hagan Smith face off against Caglione. Caglione, Arkansas took the approach of just like walking Caglione intentionally four times in a day, which was the first time we've really seen that, like a team do that. Hey, let's let somebody else beat them. Florida did salvage a game and won on Sunday, which is huge for them. Like, a road win at Arkansas is big, but like, Arkansas, when the offense is clicking, like, they're my most confident team to win the whole thing just because of the pitching depth. See you, Dimitri. Don't end the stream.
Much love, Rizgod.
All right, sick. But yeah, Jack, the that series kind of went how I thought it would go. Like, Arkansas plays really well Friday, Saturday. They win the Tigard start. They win the Hagan Smith start. And they play well on Sunday, but just can't get over the Caglione effect, winning on Sunday. So any thoughts there? I know you probably didn't watch a ton of it because you were broadcasting like around the same time. But
I went back and watched some of the highlights. There's a couple cool YouTube accounts where they just like dumb it down and like spark notes it for you.
Wheels. Shout out Wheels.
Shout out to Wheels, baby. Shout out to Wheels. It's so good, man. Like, and it's great for like my work too. Like it like almost cuts it up for me. The thing that stands out to me is like Florida really needs Colby Shelton to be good. Like he's hitting, I think 270-ish with like 14 homers. If they're going to continue to walk Cags, like if Arkansas has laid the blueprint of like, hey, anybody but him, they need him to be like an X factor. That's what stood out to me. I was going to ask you kind of answered my question already. After that, another big statement win for Arkansas. They got to be your favorite contender. You had them all year because of, geographically where they lie, but you still feel really good about them.
Yeah, I just think it's going to come down between them, Texas A&M, and Tennessee. Like, for me, those three teams have like separated themselves as like clear-cut favorites. Now, listen, it's college baseball. Things change all the time. And like, there could be a team heading into June 1st that's playing lights out baseball and like everything's clicking. Like, you can just kind of get the sense, right? Like, we all got the sense last year that LSU, when the postseason hit, was like, oh my God, like nobody's going to beat these guys twice. Like, you might get them once, but you're not going to beat them twice. And when I look at Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Arkansas, it's like, dude, who's going to beat those guys twice? Clemson is right there in the picture. I think Clemson has way more holes in their pitching staff. Like, they don't have the guy on Fridays to go out and throw 8 innings, 2 runs, whatever. Like, they kind of piece it together. Coach Backich does a really good job at Clemson of piecing his pitching staff together, and their offense is lethal too. But like for me, like there is a clear cut 1-2-3 ahead of everybody else. What I saw from Oregon State this weekend and their pitching staff showed me a lot. Like when Aiden Miller is healthy, I mean, he punched out 14 ducks on Friday. It was awesome. Electric atmosphere. Oregon State could be another team that's like a clear cut contender. And I don't know. Like there's just so much to figure out the rest of the season. You don't know who's going to get hurt. You don't know who's going to like fit into that Friday or Saturday role for a team. Like still a lot of question marks, but yeah, I guess to answer your question, if I were to like put my life on the line, I would say either Texas A&M, Tennessee, or Arkansas are going to win it all.
Yeah, that feels good with the triple head. You know, it's funny, like when we keep looking out at the West, and this could be a good transition. Like, I know Utah just cracked into the top 25 for the first time in program history. Like, I joked, yeah. I was like, I don't know a single thing about them, and I think I know college ball. Like, well, I don't know anything, right? Like, and I think that's exactly what the Pac-12's been this year. Yep. Like, Arizona's gone on these big runs. You know, Oregon's looked really good at times. My Stanford preseason pick doesn't look as bad as it once did, as Malcolm Moore and company have really gotten it going in Palo Alto. But the big thing that stands out to me, Ben, is like, man, dude, if you just look at the whole, and like you sit and watch games outside of Irvine, like, man, if Oregon State, who's going to host, right, and they'll host it as a national seed, like, if they don't get to Omaha with, like, who they'll have out there, like, it's got to feel like just such a giant disappointment, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, nobody scores
me out there except for them.
Yeah, like, we touched on it earlier in the show. I think there's some really good mid-majors out there. In between Irvine, Santa Barbara, San Diego, like those are teams that are going to probably be a two seed at the Oregon State Regional. Like that's just historically what happens. Arizona is a team that I'm buying into right now, especially when they swept Louisiana Tech, who I think is a really good mid-major team a few weeks ago. It showed me that like, okay, look, they're winning Pac-12 series. They're beating one of the top teams in Conference USA, sweeping them. Like Arizona's put it together where they have a legitimate rotation now. They have 1-9 that's starting every single game for them. So, like, those are the type of teams that can make a run in the postseason. As far as, like, going back to Utah, like, I was kind of like you. Like, dude, I think they've made it to the tournament, like, 5 times in their history. Like, they're just not a historic powerhouse of a team. But what I can tell you is they don't lose weekend series. I was looking back, like, they rarely sweep teams, but they win 2 out of 3 almost every single weekend. They lost 2 out of 3 to Oregon State, and that was their only series loss. And when you look at postseason teams, if Utah gets there in the postseason, I mean, nobody's beaten them twice other than Oregon State, but they won't be in the same regional. So like a 2-seed, 3-seed Utah going to, I don't know, like a team like Oklahoma State or something for a regional. Like, dude, you got to – it's kind of like that Washington team last year. They just kept winning weekend series.
They're a cool team because, like, again, I didn't know a ton about them, but like a decade ago, like, they just swept UCLA, made them look silly. Like, a decade ago, if I had told you that, you'd be like, you're insane, right? Like, those UCLA runs. But they do play like a really fun, like, ton of fast dudes, always advancing runners. They play really great baseball. Kai Roberts is a kid that I went and looked up. He got 28 stolen bags, just broke the Utah record that was held for, 1997, so 27 years. So he's a guy that's like kind of catalyst, like served as like their spark plug at the top of that offense. So yeah, who knows out there, but like, it does, it just feels like, I don't know. It's like Tiger Woods, like when in his prime, like it's Oregon State versus like the field out
the field. Way. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But like Oregon State, they were sliding quite a bit. Like they hit their midseason slide the last few weeks. Like they were not playing good baseball. They lost 4 straight Pac-12 games, like 5 out of the last 6 games. And they have a scrappy Oregon Ducks team coming to town. First of all, like the atmosphere in Corvallis was electric. On Saturday, they had a game on ESPN2, like late night, 10 p.m. Dude, awesome broadcast. The crowd was into it. You could tell those two teams hated each other. Nice. And it was a pitcher's duel, dude. Like back and forth, both teams just punching out. It was great. But for me, like Oregon State had a few guys step up other than Bazana this weekend, which like makes me feel more comfortable about the team. Like that means they can rise and get to the occasion. Big series against, you know, cross-state rival at home. You're slumping. The whole team is slumping and you get guys to step up and win baseball games. So like Oregon State to me is a contender. They just have more signs of weakness than the three teams I named earlier, A&M, Arkansas, and Tennessee.
I tweeted this out watching that game. It was so good, and it was like it felt like a regional, right, being a Civil War rivalry. But I tweeted this out.
anytime I see a starting pitcher, Grayson Grinsell was the dude that threw for Oregon, wearing a single-digit number, I'm immediately like, this guy's gross. Every time. Single-digit pitchers are automatically filthy. Like, it's got to be an 80 grade somewhere on that, like, you know, scouting report.
Yeah. The jersey matchups out there were great, too. Like, Oregon always rolls out different jerseys every game. It's sick. But, yeah, I mean, I think the Pac-12 right now, four teams, I think, comfortably will get in. There's a lot to change. Like, they still got three weekend series, plus they do have a Pac-12 tournament. They started 2 years ago, which is clutch because it helps RPI tremendously for that conference. But, like, right now, like, Oregon State's going to host. Arizona's got a legitimate shot to host, hopefully, like, if they finish strong. If not, there'll be a two seed somewhere. And then you have Oregon and Utah.
Yeah.
And, like, behind that, like, Stanford looks a lot better. Also, Rintaro Sasaki, the Japanese sensation, on campus at Stanford playing in inter-squad games. I don't know why he's not eligible. There's probably a lot of it would have been sick if he was playing for Stanford this year because he's, like, the number one international recruit of all time. And anyways, he's been playing these inter-squad games and hitting absolute mammo bombs.
Dude. All right, so we were talking about this off pod. College baseball fans, if you're still listening an hour or 10 in, it means you're obsessed with the game. Go do this Rintaro Sasaki deep dive. It will be, I mean, you'll be gone for hours. This kid is a must follow on Instagram. He went big fly over the batter's eye at Stanford in Palo Alto. He goes, the caption for his Instagram post, I am grateful for earning opportunity to play in sim game. I will strive to be greater. And, like, he's just him hitting a monster home run. Like,
and Stanford is playing so much better baseball now that he's on campus.
Just there. He's not even playing.
Right? He's not even on the team, but he's just playing. And they're starting to win baseball games now.
He's contagious. I love it. Whatever it is, like, he just brings winning aura, dude. I don't know why they don't get to let him play. Like, if they make the tournament, we should file a petition to let him hit in the cleanup spot.
Just let him play, yeah. He's a stud. What's his nickname? Like the Japanese Prince Fielder?
No, the Japanese Babe Ruth. And the only reason I know that is because on his Instagram, in his pinned like post, is a video of like Babe Ruth transitioning into him hitting bombs for his high school.
So sick.
There's a video of him like split squatting like 900 pounds. Like he's just a beast.
Yeah. Dude, no, he's good for college baseball. It was... Because I remember last year, like around this time, he declared that he was going to go to the United States to play college baseball. And there was a lot of people I don't think recognize like how big that is for our sport. Like instead of going to play a few years in the Nippon Professional Baseball League in Japan, getting drafted out of high school, like he's going to come to like the United States and play college baseball for 3 years. And when he decided, I mean, I think he was deciding between Stanford, Oregon State, like there was like four or five schools, but he picks.
He's a super smart dude. So Vandy was up. I think Vandy was like a front runner right away too.
Yeah. But when he chose Stanford, everybody was like, wow, like why Stanford? Well, like it turns out he's like a genius. He's also just like, I don't know, like he's the perfect fit to like revolutionize this game of college baseball because he'll be the pioneer and we'll start seeing more people internationally come and play college baseball. So that was another touch point I had written down. Really cool to see him in inner squads hitting absolute nukes. The only other, like, few other things I have written down before we wrap it up. And look, I know we didn't go into deep dives of conferences. Like, look, I know Texas won at like midnight last night against Oklahoma, win the series. Like, that's huge for Texas's standings in the Big 12 as far as like RPI 2. If you lose that series, you're in trouble. But like, they live to see another weekend. Back to back series wins for Texas over TCU and Oklahoma. But what Wake Forest did to not only me, but to you this weekend was brutal. Losing 2 out of 3, like Wake Forest was a team with all the momentum in the world. Like it felt like they finally figured it out. Unanimous number one team in the nation coming in this year. And you lose 2 out of 3 to a Notre Dame team that's sitting at like 3-18 in the ACC standings. Like that sets you back a lot because if you're a fringe host team, and the committee looks at what you did and you're like, oh, you lost 2 out of 3 to Notre Dame. Like they might not be able to host now. Like their RPI dropped a good bit too. Not good for Wake Forest, but I'm still a believer. I think they're going to figure it out. Like I think they'll end up in Omaha, but golly, man, like as an investor, There's parlays that were just ruined this weekend.
Yeah, dead the rights. Dunzo. Hypothetical investors, do not touch them. The Demon Deacons are demonic.
Yeah.
Nick Kurtz is Nick Kurtz still. Like, I don't know if you saw that ball that he hit out, was so stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm out on the boys. Another
it reminded me of like the 2021, maybe 20, I don't remember what, maybe 2019, but Nico Cavadas from Notre Dame, the big Greek guy. Yeah. Like what Nick Kurtz and like some of those home runs, there was like five or six 450 foot homers or more at this Notre Dame field. But it reminded me of what Nico Cavadas would do when he was at Notre Dame. And yeah, dude, I don't have much else to say besides like Wake Forest, roller coaster of a team.
Yeah,
dude, some weeks they look like they're going to win the national championship. And some weeks they're like, they're not even a tournament team.
Yeah, there's no hot, cold, hot there. They're just like the world's craziest roller coaster this season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you just got to catch Fuego like late. But it's just their pitching. Like their pitching hasn't been, you know, they blow another lead on Sunday to lose that series. And you're just like, what happened here? Like, what am I missing?
Yeah.
But I don't know. That, you know what? Another ACC story that I thought the pitching was going to be better. But, man, Florida State, I talked a lot of shit about that bullpen, and they were really good this weekend against Duke. Like, not worried about Duke. They bounced back on Sunday, got a big win just not to get swept at home. But, dude, Florida State, like, I thank goodness the Rizgot's not on to talk about him because he was spot on, man. They're really good.
Yeah. No, they are. I mean, they're 13-8 in the SEC, or the ACC, 34-9 overall. They've only lost one non-conference game. RPI at number six, they're above 500 in quadrant one games. If you take, I say this all the time, but that series against Clemson where they get swept, and that series against they got swept by Wake Forest, right?
Yeah.
I'm pulling up their schedule. I know they got swept. No, they lost 2 out of 3 to Wake Forest.
Got swept by
Clemson, but like there was so many winnable games. Like they lost 2 1-run games at Wake where the bullpen blew it. They lost 2 games against Clemson where the bullpen blew it. Like Florida State, man, they're always a fun team to watch. And like we've seen them beat up on Florida in the midweeks, like outscoring them like 54-6 or something crazy. Like they have the talent and like they have the pieces. I'm just I don't know. Like the bullpen looked good Friday, Saturday against Duke, but Sunday they got torched.
Yeah, they're I don't know. Duke, I knew, was deeper on the mound. Like, I think that's why, like, they sustained and just kind of outlasted Florida State. Like, I think the Noles, like, just sold out for Friday and Saturday. You know what I mean? And just ran out of gas, which does kind of concern you for, like, regional play. Like, God forbid they have to come through the loser's bracket or play.
Right, exactly. Yep.
It's like, that's where you're like, ooh, like, that could be a one seed that gets upset at home if they host. But man, I had to eat my words a little bit, but that was a really fun one. Are we missing anything else? Virginia Tech salvaged yesterday. Their offense is still really, really good, but the ACC is just a hodgepodge, kind of like the Sun Belt, like we joked about. But it's just so tight.
It's so tight. I'm looking at the standings right now. Like Wake Forest, they're 12-12, but ahead of them, like NC State's still 12-9, Florida State 13-8, Clemson leading the Atlantic part. 15-6. The best record, though, North Carolina 17-7, which is ridiculous. They keep flying under the radar. Like, they're a deep team. Their freshmen are getting better every single weekend. But, like, I'm still telling you, like, Virginia and Duke and NC State are three teams that could easily make a run. They don't even have to host. Like, they can be a two seed somewhere and win the regional, win a super. Virginia, Duke, and NC State are, like, sleeper teams for me.
Yep.
Louisville 10-11 in the ACC. Them and Georgia Tech are like the two fringe teams. Like, could they get an at-large spot? Could they get that 9th or 10th spot out of the ACC? But like Boston College, Notre Dame, Miami, Pitt, like they're all dead. Like, two of them will make the ACC tournament, but they're going to have to win it to get into the tournament.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech, another impressive win. Like, win a series against Miami at home. Our boy Drew Burris is hitting better now. I mean, he hit like 9 homers in the first 11 games, and he's at 18 right now, but he slowed down a good bit during the middle of the season.
Yeah, little typical for a freshman. Did you see the ball he hit out in that breaking ball down, though?
It's crazy. I don't know how that ball got out.
He hit it with one hand. He hit a home run, literally top and bottom hand, really, literally hit a ball out with one arm. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. The Big 12 still kind of a mess. Oklahoma has a one-game lead over Oklahoma State, West Virginia. Texas still just two back. Like, dude, Texas is just such an interesting team to me. Like, I've seen them play. A lot of times they don't look good, but
no, they just keep stacking series. Like, it was that about 3 weeks ago when we looked at them in TCU and we're like, well, they're not gonna get in. What is happening? Like, that's another team like Wake Forest. I've just always been on the wrong side of, and you know, see him in the Houston Classic. I was like, yo, like, what happened here? Like, we thought they were super deep on the mound. They're not, but they just keep winning games. So I forget that they were, like, literally a fly ball in the lights away from going to Omaha last year. They return a lot of the same pieces, honest to God. Like, it's a lot of the same names, a couple of different dudes in the back end. But, yeah, maybe they could be like the TCU of last year where, like, they were brutal early and then they just go on this crazy back half run. So who knows, man? I knew this. Jalen Flores is he's so good. He's so good.
I forgot. This is actually one of the most entertaining things we have for this show. Jack, you have a hater. I don't know if you know this, but a legitimate hater. Good. And he goes by the name Blind Man Nate. He actually won the weekend series pick'em last year. He partied with me and my brother and the other winners in Vegas during the College World Series. He won the trip. He awesome dude. Funny. He knows everything about sports. He is blind. But anyway, so like he listens to the pod, right? Like, he's a diehard podcast listener.
Okay.
And he's also a diehard Kansas Jayhawks fan. So I get this text message from him yesterday, last night at 10:17 p.m. Hope you guys are picking Kansas versus Kansas State for the weekend series pick'em next week. I want to hear Jack's pencil talk. We'll back up the talk of how good Kansas State was. Even just 2 weeks ago, Jayhawks went 2 out of 3 next week. That didn't make a ton of sense. Basically, what he's saying is, like, Kansas and Kansas State are playing a weekend series this week. And he sent me a few texts throughout the year just saying, like, Kansas is better than Kansas State. Kansas is better than Kansas State. And he wants to know if Pencil Talk is going to back up this talk that Kansas State's better than Kansas, even though Kansas 12-9 in the Big 12, sitting around like third or fourth place. And the Jayhawks are rolling JUCO bandits for days on that squad. Bandits. So what do you have to say about this to Blind Man Nate?
Nate, I'm sorry, man. Let's mend the fences here. Here's what I'll tell you, Nate. Interviewed Kansas State players. That's all it comes down to. That's why I fell in love with them. I think they got some serious MLB draft capital rolling around in that locker room. I will truthfully tell you, I don't know a ton about Kansas. Big fan of the program, though. Antonio Garcia, a former player and assistant coach there. Ride or die, homie. Here's the deal, Nate. Why don't we state a little friendly wager? I'll find some rock chalk gear, and I'll wear it on a podcast. I'll wear it to broadcast a game. If they beat up on Kansas State, and if not, I'm not even going to ask you to wear Wildcat gear because I think that'd be disrespectful. But maybe we'll add a little purple to your closet. How about that? But let's mend the fences, though.
Hey, I'll tell you this, and he's got a great sense of humor. He won't care me saying this. He doesn't care if he's wearing purple or not. He has no idea.
I figured that by the nickname, but still, you know, he'll hate it.
No, he was a great time in Vegas. We partied it up. I don't think he's doing too well. And I haven't seen him in the standings this year for the weekend series pick him, but yeah, he's a Jack hater. He's been telling me all year, like, listen, Kansas State's frauds. Kansas is better. And of course he's like a diehard Jayhawks fan, but yeah, I just thought that was funny.
I love it. I mean, Nate, everyone's got to have a hater. I get it. It's fun to hate. I'll fuel that fire for you. You know what? How about this? I'll just piss off everybody. The Big 12's terrible this year. Like, I can't get a read on it. There's no feel. So maybe it's not K-State hate or Kansas hate. It's just maybe like my distaste towards the Big 12 this year. Because I feel like every team I'm on the wrong side of every time I make a, you know, kind of blanket statement.
Yeah, but what do we know about the Big 12? There's always one team that ends up getting freaking scorching hot into the year, comes out of nowhere, makes it to the College World Series. TCU last year, Oklahoma 2 years ago, Texas in 2019. Like, it could be Kansas. Like, it could be a Kansas team, could be Texas Tech, Kansas State, UCF, like – Someone like down in the, shoot, it could even be TCU. Like, TCU can keep back up and run it back. But like, it's tough for me. Like, I want to say like Oklahoma State's the best team in the Big 12, but because they have series wins over Oklahoma and West Virginia. But like, it's a week by week basis. You just don't know. There's 5 games separating first place to eighth place, so it's deep. six and a half games separating first and 11th. It's jam packed up there. So I don't know. I mean, Big 12 is interesting. There'll be one team though that makes it to Omaha, yeah. Like almost guaranteed.
Yeah. Oh, I like that pick. We're looking at how many ACC teams go this year?
I think I counted nine. Nine was a little generous, but like Clemson, Florida State, NC State, Wake Forest, those four are locks. North Carolina, Virginia, Duke, Virginia Tech, maybe not a lock, but 13 and 11, the ACC. So let's just say eight there. And then I think either Louisville or Georgia Tech.
I like
it. Or I could say like between Louisville, Georgia Tech, and Virginia Tech, two of those three teams make it.
I like it.
Yeah.
So I like that. Yeah. And then we're going to have two non-Power 5 teams get into Omaha this year.
Yep.
Probably two or three SEC, one Big 12, two or three ACC, and then maybe a West Coast team. That sounds right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot more parity this year. Like we're used to seeing four SEC teams, two ACC teams, a Big 12, and a Pac 12. Like that's kind of been, you know, Stanford went two or three straight years. There was always like, I don't know, four SEC teams at least. So I think this year's going to be more parity. Maybe three SEC teams, two ACC teams, a Big 12. Oh, wait. Golly. There might not be two non-Power 5 teams. It would have to take like a historic run. Let me think.
I liked your Toreros pick today.
Toreros could get there. UC Irvine, Santa Barbara. Let's see. Let me think real fast. Like East Carolina. Oh, dude, like I love East Carolina. I think they're going to get there finally. Breakthrough. Sunbelt team could get there. Dallas Baptist easily could. I don't know.
It's a lot.
But anyways, last thing I want to say before we wrap up this hour and a half episode, shout out to Jason Arndt. How do you pronounce his last name? Do you know who I'm talking about? A-R-E-N-D-T. Infielder for UNC Wilmington.
Wilmington, yeah.
He's like a legitimate country singer coming out with like an album or something in May. I was listening to his music, like really good, like country music. And he's playing on the team.
Dude, crazy. I was multitasking at its finest. He's crushing it.
Yeah, we need to get him on Club Bromaha. Let him play some music. Dude, honestly, if he wants to come up with like an 11.7 intro song for the pod, dude, if he wants to do it, all for him.
Dude, we could easily do that. You know what I think is really cool, too, is that Wilmington is, like, promoting the hell out of it, too.
Yeah, it's really cool.
They are, like, really, like, bolstering the kid to, like, chase both of these dreams in season. Like, how many programs would be, like, super cool with, like, a guy, like, you know, taking his mind away from things, like, in another – I don't know. I just think it's cool the way that they back the dude.
Yeah. Jason – I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Arndt. A-R-E-N-D-T. Y'all look him up. I think he probably has like Spotify or whatever. I just watched the trailer clip that they tagged us in. That was really cool. Like, I love seeing talented people playing our game.
Dude, I'm gonna reach out to him right now, actually. Have him do like an intro song and an outro.
It'd be huge. Huge for everybody. But anyways, do you want to do a quick weekend series pick? Or not weekend series pick. I'm sorry. Let's do a quick midweek preview. This is like we're in prime. If there's a 10% chance of rain and it's going to hurt our RPI, we're in prime RPI cancellation midweek season.
Oh, it's coming.
But other than that, let me share my screen right quick. We can probably find five or six games that we love. Ooh. UNC Wilmington playing at NC State midweek.
Great one.
Wake
shouldn't play that App State game. App can beat them. App's been better this year.
Yeah, that's let me check the weather over here on the East Coast real fast for Tuesday. I'm over here on the let's see, weather app. Then we're at Low Country. Beautiful all week. All right, let's see. I can see VCU at home beating Virginia. Like no Virginia's doubt. In this gauntlet of the ACC schedule. They don't care about VCU.
Go to the Diamond, too. I don't know if you guys have ever been there. It's a crazy-looking stadium.
Oh, dude, Charlie Condon's going to play at Kennesaw. Dude, he's going to hit two or three homers. Like, I think he's from Kennesaw or Marietta, one of those towns, like, right near Kennesaw. And that field is a launching pad. He's going to hit a homer or two. Please pitch to him, Kennesaw State. Please pitch to him. I can see Charlotte beating UNC. Charlotte's been pretty good in the midweeks.
Okay.
We get another Oregon State at Oregon matchup midweek. That's pretty cool. Illinois is good in Big Ten. Hosting Indiana State.
That'd be good. That could be a statement game for Illinois.
Oh, dude, how about this? UC Irvine at San Diego.
That's the U and Rizgod bowl game right there.
Dude, that is crucial. Crucial for the mid-major poll. That'll be a fun one to watch. San Diego's rolling. 8 straight wins. And they look good. Grand Canyon hates Arizona. They'll probably pull off the upset there.
Wichita State could definitely beat Oklahoma State.
In the midweeks. Was just the ranked games. Let's see if there's any other big-time ones. Dude, we got to get – is Maryland Eastern Shore playing? Maryland Eastern Shore is 0-38. They're playing at Georgetown midweek. We got to get the Eastern Shore boys get a win here.
Well,
Georgetown just swept Creighton. Look ahead game. The battle of the Big East right now. Like, they're not going to be focused. Get a win, Maryland Eastern Shore. Please.
Ben, you called it. If they don't get it done against Georgetown next Tuesday, they play at George Mason. We might have to do a live stream of that game because I have guaranteed it. I've guaranteed it. If George Mason gives them their first win of the year, I will in full uniform crap in my pants.
Oh, dude, I hope that happens. There's nothing more I want than that to happen.
I really don't. That'd be a bummer.
Backyard brawl at PNC Park, West Virginia at Pitt at the Pirate Stadium.
Oh, that's an awesome
PM. One. Big time. Cincinnati, Ohio State always play fun games. I won't watch it, but I'll keep up with it. Is Lindenwood going to beat Missouri?
Oh, there you go. That's a fun one. No.
No. I heard we go Nebraska Creighton again. Yeah. Charles Schwab Field. Oh, speaking of, thoughts and prayers to everybody in like the Midwest, like Nebraska, Oklahoma. A lot of those states got hit with giant tornadoes, and I know it damaged like a lot of houses and properties. Like, man, that was tough to look at on Friday, I think. Friday, Saturday, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So if you're in the Omaha region, man, thoughts and prayers to you guys.
Yeah, that was terrifying. I know that we had some friends that were at that Creighton and at Creighton and Coastal Carolina midweek. I know our boy Dylan Nielsen, who's a ride or die for the brand guy. If you're listening, man, I hope you know, prayers and good vibes sent to all you and your family. Those pictures didn't even look real of that tornado,
dude. It looked like CGI.
It
looked like the movie Twister.
Yeah, just like based in 2024 with better like graphic. You know what I mean? Like it was kind of scary shit.
Yeah, it was scary. All right, I'm going to check Wednesday right quick. Oh, Wednesday, May 1st. Pay your rent, everybody.
Made it. I'm a second guy.
Let's see. You're a second guy? Yeah.
Yeah, it's the worst.
William and Mary at UNC. Nah. George Mason at Georgetown.
There you go. How about that one?
Forrest at High Point.
They're canceled.
Our High Point boys are rolling since we visited.
Dude, the boys are buzzing. We show up. They win 25-5 over Richmond. Haven't looked back since. Haven't lost a Big South Conference weekend since we went and visited the boys. That's going to be a fun one.
Campbell Liberty, always great. Those two teams don't really like each other. I feel like I remember a few little, like...
They don't.
Not scuffles, but just some chippiness between those two teams in years past.
That was years ago when they were both in the Big South. This is like 16, 17. They used to brawl. It was fun.
ETSU, really good team, high-powered offense at South Carolina. I could see that a huge look-ahead game for South Carolina. ETSU pulls that one off. Ole Miss, Mississippi State at Trustman Park, Pearl, Mississippi. Guaranteed awful broadcast. Really fun game to watch always. Kansas State, Nebraska is good. I enjoy that.
Nebraska's going Creighton the day before and then Kansas State the next day?
Yep.
That's a tough double. Double midweek. Ugh.
That'll help their RPI, though. It should, at least. True. Well, cool. Do we want to try to pick the weekend series before Dimitri?
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right, so we're not going to pick any Thursday games. So remember these games. If you're on the YouTube, you can see it's like Maine, UMBC, whatever, Tennessee, Florida, BYU, Miami, San Fran, Portland, Louisville, Boston College. Don't pick any of those. But let's pick our six series right here. I'm going to write them down. Just send them to the Riz God.
Let's definitely pick one that he's going to hate.
All right, Arkansas at Kentucky is one for sure. Oh, yeah, we're going to pick some that he hates.
Yeah.
Ark at UK. I could be interested in Cal USC. Interested. Not saying for sure, but interested Friday.
Dude, Dayton Richmond, massive A-10 implications. I know we're not going to pick it because Riscod would hate the hell out of it. But I will tell you, one of my buddies that coaches on that staff, Tommy Winterstein, he put me on. Dayton's got a kid, Nick Wissman. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of guys don't care about like wins and losses for pitchers. Dude, he had two more wins this weekend. He's 9-1 on the year with six saves. Like he's like gross as shit.
Now, Dayton was my preseason pick to win the A-10. They're looking good. I did a little bit of research on them before the season and liked what the pieces they had coming in. They released those awesome logos. It was cool. We put Maryland Eastern Shore at Lemoyne this weekend. Lemoyne, the newest Division I team, the Dolphins. No, we're not going to do that. But
we definitely could do Long Island Merrimack, 18-6 versus 14-10 in the Northeast.
Yeah. the Shocks, the Long Island Shocks.
The Shocks in the water.
Let's see. Man, these are kind of tough weekend.
Great.
Really nothing popping off yet. Man, this is going to be a tough weekend.
High point up. Presbyterian
Carlson Southern? Question mark?
I'll be there. I'll be on the call, baby.
Nope, can't do it then.
Can't do it. You could do High Point Upstate. Good little Big South Brock. Yeah.
Where's that one? I miss it.
Bottom right. You got it.
Oh, right here. High Point at Upstate. Mercer Samford. Now Samford's rolling in the
South. Let's definitely do Mercer. Let's definitely do Mercer. Samford at home, though, is a wagon.
Yeah, they're freaking good, man. They could win a regional.
I'm not seeing it yet. We just did.
It's some tough weekends. It's like tough. Georgia Tech at Clemson. Like Clemson's gonna roll them. Ah, dude, come on. Oh, here we go. NC State at Florida State. I like that.
We just did Florida State, though, right? We've done Florida State a ton this year.
We've done Florida State a ton. That is true.
We'll find something.
Vandy at Georgia. Let's write it down. Let's see.
It's going from worse to worser.
FIU Liberty, possibly.
Indiana Purdue, not bad. It's some big.
Indiana Purdue, we'll make the list. Yep. Purdue's first place. Purdue took over first place of the Big Ten. So yeah. Indiana at Purdue. People forget, but Purdue hosted a regional in like 2012 ish.
I forgot.
They used to be really good. That's Creighton St. John's, possibly. Campbell, UNCW.
Now, that would be a good one, and I'll tell you why. Campbell, who just ran into the buzzsaw that is the College of Charleston. The College of Charleston is the real deal, like number one in the country in the ERA. That's a must-win series. Like, the time has run out, Campbell. Like, there's no more cold, hot, cold. Like, it's time now, and UNCW sits at the top of the standings. Like, that's a good one.
I like that. We'll add it. Campbell, UNCW.
Give the Campbells one final shot.
Huh. Other than that, we're running out of – oh, Jacksonville, Florida, Gulf Coast is always a fun series. Terrible broadcast, but always fun to watch.
Here we go.
Austin Peay, Stetson. Here we go. Austin Peay at Stetson. Both up there, 14-7 in the A-Sun.
What's the A-Sun standings look like?
I will show you that in just 1 second. There's like four teams tied for first place. Kansas State. The Blind Man Nate Pencil Talk rivalry series.
Nate. For Nate. Yeah. Let's do it. Yeah. We've got some. That's a fun one for everyone, just including us.
Alabama at Mississippi State. That's a good series. Alabama plays bad on the road, but they talented team. Oh, Louisiana Troy. I know we do those teams all the time, but that's a huge series.
Big one.
Sweeps tied for first with the tiebreaker.
Huge
at Troy too. Oh man, running low. Here we go.
Texas Tech OU, I guess, is something. Yeah,
Texas Tech hosting Oklahoma.
I know LSU A&M. I think the public is going to be all over A&M on the road. LSU at the box could be big.
And it's a must-win series. Like, they're 7-14 in the SEC. Like, they lose three more SEC games. I don't think they're getting in with a 13-17 SEC record. Or they would have to do some damage in the SEC tournament.
Did I say this earlier? Did I say this on the pod earlier? I want to piss some people off. I want to piss Florida fans off. LSU, and I'm going to piss you and Riz God off because you're off on LSU. LSU's going to finish with a better SEC record than Florida.
Mm.
And then they're going to
have games back right now.
Three games back with three series to play. They finish with a better record than Florida.
They're only two games back. Florida 9-12.
LSU 6?
7-14.
They had 7 wins. Oh, even better.
Does Florida have the tiebreaker, though? I feel like they've played each other this year.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
Let's see.
In Gainesville.
Yeah, Florida won at LSU. So basically three games. Three games worse.
They got run ruled on Sunday.
Oklahoma State at Texas is a big one. I feel like I just passed. Oh, yeah, Oregon hosting Utah. Utah's playing much better. Yeah, we'll be able to pick 6 here. I'll let Rizgod finish it up. Oh, here we go. Sacred Heart Wagner will be a fun one.
Yes, he would hate that. That'd be perfect.
Yeah, but they're both 18-6 in the NEC. Well, cool. Yeah, we got more options than I was really hoping there when we got about halfway through and we had one series. I was like, uh-oh, this one might be brutal. But anyways, yeah, we'll wrap it up there. We'll be back Wednesday, Thursday sometime. Try to do a Club Bar Omaha. I had to cancel last week. It was I don't know. I have a 2-year-old, so it's tough to schedule things. But we do want to do a Club Bar Omaha. So you're broadcasting this weekend, Charleston Southern?
Yeah, but I don't have any midweeks. So you just let me know, baby.
A little midweek Club Bar Omaha?
Ooh, let's get weird.
All right. Appreciate everybody listening. And if you guys need anything, just let us know.